right, stop number 4 of the Water Ski Pro Tour, Lake 38. This is Trent Findlayson. I'm joined with pro water skier Stevie Island. Stevie, you were there. I know, you know, from this is a hard transition, right? Because, I mean, you were there as an athlete. You had an amazing 2022 season, you know, started moving up the leaderboard, moving up the ranking list, you know, a couple of 3 at 41. So especially when you saw 3 at 41 got you, you know, well onto the podium. So I'm sure that one stung a little bit. What stood up for you? What, tell me about Lake 38. I've never skied that event. It's getting a lot of traction. People love to go. Why? What's going on over there?
So Lake 38 Pro-Am, it's a really cool event. I mean, it's very laid back. It almost has a similar vibe to a hilltop type of event where, you know, it's a private site. And everyone who shows up, the amateurs and just fans alike, they just love water skiing and they're so laid back and that's they just cool. have this amazing positive attitude. And I think it really puts the pros at ease when that type of event is put on. And yeah, that's what I really appreciate about the Lake 38 Pro-Am. And, you know, Keith and Karen have an amazing facility there. So just it has a lot of things going for it. Of course, it skis well, too. So there's that. I mean, if you're going to a site and you know it skis well, that's always a huge bonus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, yeah, like you said, let's talk specifically about that because it there were some amazing scores and there were and then the people that were putting out the better scores were also skiing quite consistently, but there also seemed like to be a little bit of a gap where you know people it seemed that people either figured it out that weekend or they didn't figure it out that weekend. Was there something at play that was making it more challenging than it looked or more challenging for some people that didn't, you know, weren't able to get in front of whatever kind of conditions might have been arising?
Yeah, that is a curious thing, right? I mean, this was an interesting event in the fact that to get into the final for the men, I mean, I think it was the lowest cutoff score for a final that I've seen since I joined the tour.
For sure.
So that was curious. I think the gate from the far end got a lot of people. Got me, even though it was even my second year skiing there. I don't know what it is. It might be the visual. It might be the speed. It might be that little tailwind that was kind of up and down for the entire, you know, 3 days of the event. I don't know. It's hard to say, honestly, because the boat felt great. The driving felt super on point. I mean, Keith was driving the men and it's his site and he was dialed. So it's honestly hard to put a finger on it and say specifically what was wrong, but there was definitely some interesting scores.
There was a full spectrum, right? There was people that were just killing it, like Freddie Winter, both qualifying rounds, 5 at 41, and you know a 5 at 41 that looked, you know, more than runnable up until they got to 4 ball. But then you go, you know, last man into the finals, Robert Pagosi, just never looked settled all weekend.
Yeah, I know. That's the specific skier I was going to bring up was Pagosi, who he missed 39 all 3 rounds, but he looked really good. I mean, his 38s, he was just really on the 38. And that's how I felt too. I felt like my 38, my second round, I felt like I really stroked it and it felt really good. And then we go into that 39 and there were some bobbles, even in the finals, you know, you had Benny who got really deep at 4 ball and, you know, he was able to stay composed and run the pass. But even, Rob Hazelwood, he had a bobble early at 39, 1 and 2 ball, I think, but he was able to stay composed. So it was almost like there weren't going to be these perfect 39s that we see at a lot of men's finals, but it was going to be the more experienced and more composed athletes that were going to be able to get through it.
Yeah, that is true. So before we get into the nuts and bolts of recapping this event, what stood out for you? Any kind of moments of the weekend, any performances that definitely shook you a little bit?
Well, I know that Allie Nicholson, she won skier of the day, and I think that was for good reason. She ran a huge 4 at 39 in the final. And anytime you're going to a final, I know Allie, you know, she's been around the block and she's had a great season so far, even making the, you know, the King of Darkness final, which was only a 4 competitor final. She, you know, going into a final, you have the nerves a little bit. There's more people paying attention to, you know, the specifics of your skiing. And, you know, the pressure is on. You have that one round to go out and perform. And to see her, you know, really crank that 2 ball where she was having trouble the previous day and get out of 2 in really good shape. I honestly thought she might run that pass. That was really impressive.
Yeah, she was making it look she was making it look super basic. I think probably in keeping with women's slalom, for me it was that is as good as I've seen Whitney McClintock look. The only pass of the weekend that she had to get a little bit nasty was the 39 in the finals. But I mean, 2 at 41 every single round. Second round of the prelims, I mean, she had every opportunity to attack three ball, just went inside. But she's on a different line than she's ever been on. Like 41 looks runnable. I know she's been running in practice. She's openly stated that her goal is to run it in tournament this year. And you could watch even in the finals. I don't know if you noticed, Stevie, but she got a pretty darn good one ball. You know, she attacked center line on her way to two. And there was a moment where she stood up as if she was going to attack two ball. And I think there was a moment like, am I going to S turn this thing and win? Or is this the start I needed to get to 4, 5, or 6? And I know it played on her for a second because she didn't do a safety, you know, it wasn't like a safety transition into an obvious S turn. There was a moment where she was ready to attack two ball.
Yeah, the thing that I have to know about Whitney McClintock is her confidence level. It's so impressive, and it's so apparent in her skiing. I mean, her confidence is through the roof right now. She knows every time she comes into 39 that she's going to rip it, and it's just a matter of how many buoys she's going to get at 41. In the prelims, she went inside a three, almost had the Canadian record, you know, breaking, I believe, her own record of a 2 at 41. Yep. She was just inside three. So it was like, oh my goodness. And she's getting such good starts. So yeah, I think we're going to see her go down that line later this year.
Big time. She's going to be a handful this year for Jamie and Regina. Because like you 100%. Said, super confident and she's hungry for something different, you know? Like she had just, I wrote an article about her in the current issue of Waterski Nation, Waterski Journal. And she just said, I'm done S turning. My goal now is to run that pass. So as soon as you switch gears like that as an athlete, expectations change, and that could be scary for people. What about on the men's side of things? There were obviously some amazing skiing. What stood out for you as kind of the moment of the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of really good skiing on the men's side of things. But before we move on to the men, I did want to shout out to Luis Amarillo running the PB.
Yes.
2.5 at 39. That was super impressive. Throw that in there.
Colombian national record, right?
Yeah, Colombian national record. So that's huge. And she's been ripping 38. She ran 38 all three rounds. So that's huge. So congrats to her. But yeah, moving on to the men. I mean, it's hard to put a finger on. I mean, Sledge ran 3:41 literally every round, right? Or almost every round, I think. He ran 9 every single round. I think he ran maybe 2 threes. One in the prelim, one in the final. I think that's huge. And Rob Hazelwood running 3:41 literally every round, all three rounds. So that's why he came in third instead of fourth, right? As he had that backup score of the second three. That's really impressive consistency. Yeah.
Was it for me too. That was a fun one because, you know, there was a lot of open chatter about like whether this guy can ever turn three ball, and he was embracing it. Having fun with it. And he did, he looked, you know, three, I mean, 3 at 41, all three rounds. He's never done that before. And like you said, that consistency is what got him on the podium. So if we're just going to go, we're going to run down the podium really quick on the women's side of things, like you said, 4:39 in the finals for Allie Nicholson, Regina 1.5 at 41, and Regina had an amazing weekend. Also, she ran 2 at 41, 2 at 41, 1.5 at 41. And when that gets you second place in this format of a tournament, that's how you know that things were legit there. And then Whitney, you know, with another win, with 2 at 41 again in the finals.
Regina actually got 1.25.
She did,
because she had that huge crash. If you remember,
yes, a
pretty epic crash. She threw it out.
Yes, and this has been good. Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that because. It seemed like we used to never see Regina crash because she was just so measured. But, you know, and if she's taken a couple hard spells in the last two seasons. But I, you know, that's testament to the people that are now, you know, tighter on her heels than ever before.
Yeah. Chelsea also had a 2.25 at 39 and she threw it out and she has a messed up ankle right now. So, I mean, these women, they really want it. I mean, Regina, I know she had that knee injury last year, so maybe that's why she had a few, you know, a little bit more reserved performances at 41, but wow, it was really cool to see him go for it.
And then just run down the top three for the men, Stevie.
Yeah, so in third place, we were just talking about him, handsome Rob Hazelwood, 3 at 41, and knocking out Sledge with his backup scores. And Freddie Winter coming in second, 3 at 41, knocking out Rob with the backup scores.
Yeah.
And then Nate Smith, 5.5 at 41. And he was the only competitor in the final to go out at 35 off, which I found interesting, taking 41 from that opposite side.
Yeah, yeah, he took it a little bit down. I mean, a little bit downwind, and like you said, that was a trouble. If I'm correct, that's a side people were having trouble with, correct?
That is correct. So I found that really interesting that he switched it up. But in his post game interview, he said, you know, what's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over again, and expecting the same results. So clearly, he didn't like the view of 41 from the dockside end and the two prelim rounds, and he decided, you know, I'm going to switch it up, and it clearly paid off. He won the event.
And how good did he look? How good did he look in the finals? I mean, he looked you know, he looked reasonably good all weekend. On the finals, it's when he gets on that line, when he gets like early angle and bleeds as little speed as possible. He gets on this swing line where it looks so automatic. His 39 was, I mean, it was the type of pass that makes you want to drop what you're doing, go get your ski on and see if you can find that feeling or just something even similar to it.
Yeah, his 39 in the final was pretty much textbook perfect. Extremely impressive. I mean, he just makes it look so easy, right? Like you said, the line he takes is the thing I tell people about Nate's skiing, I think, is the efficiency of it. Every movement is precise, and there's no inefficiency anywhere even close in his skiing. It's a thing of beauty. It makes it look so easy.
And it's so basic. You know, I think that's and what's funny to me is I think that's why some people are confused by it. You know, there isn't this small arsenal of very specific movements that stand out. You know, like people love to watch Dane because they love to watch the sequence of movements that he makes as he leaves the second wake. You know, they like to focus in on, and it's often the stuff that isn't really that important. But with Nate, there are no extraneous movements. So, you know, its simplicity is actually what baffles people. It was insane. So, and saw a little bit of shakeups on the Klipsch Audio Pro Tour leaderboard, and we're at stop four and it's already getting exciting. And the women's side of thing, Allie's still sitting in third place, 64 points, but it's the Regina Whitney McClintock battle. Wow, Whitney is currently 10 points ahead of Regina. So it's tight, and it's a lot of it's, you know, this there's going to be some ebb and flow to this season because I know Whitney's doing the European leg. I'm not sure about Regina. I'll be surprised if she does all of it. So there we could see some swings that you know, could pay off dividends, you know, towards the end of season when the bonus money is up for grabs. And then on the men's side of thing, equally as exciting, Rob Hazelwood, you know, moved up into third place on the Pro Tour leaderboard. He's got, you know, a 20 some odd point jump between him and Freddie in second place. And then 33, 35 points, you know, spread between Nate and Fred. So Nate's in the lead, 120 points, Freddie 87, Rob Hazelwood, 64. And it's, you know, and it's interesting because consistency is really going to pay off when it comes to earning this Pro Tour check at the end of the season. Both consistency and obviously your performance, but consistently showing up weekend after weekend after weekend. You know, you look at someone like Allie. Not only does she show up, but Allie's always going to be right there. You know, waiting for someone to make a mistake so she can get up, either, you know, get up into second place or first place. But even if she's not, she's always going to be that fifth, fourth, third, somewhere like that. And, you know, and she consistently shows up weekend after weekend. So it'll be interesting to watch after this European swing to see, you know, where everything shakes out. What's next, Stevie? What's the next event?
Well, the next event on the Water Ski Pro Tour, I believe, will be Monaco Slalom Cup. I believe.
We got one more actually. This is one of those oddities in that back to back weekends. The jumpers are all going to head to Louisiana. They're probably a lot of them That's are right. there right now. Yeah, Louisiana Night Jam is this weekend. And it's going to be, you know, there's some history to this event. It's Freddy Krueger's stomping grounds. He grew up skiing there. Taylor Garcia spent a lot of time skiing there. So this is like the night event of all night events. It's a party on the water. The skiers love it. The fans love it. It's going to be a good one to watch.
Oh, it's going to be so exciting. Do you know if Dodd's jumping in it?
I do not know. That one I don't know. I've seen. It looks like he might be on a bit of a beach holiday, celebrating his Masters win. So I'm not sure if he's going to be there or not. But what do you have coming up, Stevie? Before we sign off.
Well, I have a record at Hobe Lake coming up, and then we're off to Europe. Me and Elizabeth, we're doing the Europe leg this year. We're super excited for it. We'll be doing, a few events over there, and super stoked for that trip. I mean, I've never skied in Europe, so this is really exciting for Elizabeth and I. Can't wait.
Ah, awesome. All right, man. Well, I'm glad you're attending that leg of the Pro Tour, and good luck the rest of the season.
Hey, thanks so much. Thanks so much, Trent. Take it easy.